We're moves in the yuan and the yen today, thanks to policy from China and a bit of a warning from Japan. Otherwise, it's a quiet one with equities down for the United States, but yields pushing higher. And today, lots of consumer confidence numbers. It's Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, the US dollar is down a little today, another 0.2% down on the DXY, with the Aussie up 0.4% to 65.4 US cents. The pound is up 0.3%, about the same for the euro. US equities are down today and moving lower towards the close, so finishing with a 0.4% close in the Dow, and the S&P and NASDAQ both down 0.3%. Let's, of course, remember where they're coming down off the back of course. The Russell 2000 just in the green, though. It's managed to close up 0.1%. And in Europe, stocks closed up, well, 0.3% for the Euro Stoxx 50 and the DAX at close, but the UK saw the FTSE 100 down 0.2%. And bond yields are higher, up 5 basis points for 10-year treasuries, up to 4.25%, up 6 basis points for 10-year gilts, 5 for 10-year bunds. Aussie 10 years yesterday were down 3 basis points to 4%, now on futures up 5 basis points on that. And oil is higher, up 1.6% for Brent, up to $86.80 a barrel, up 1.8% for WTI. And it's Rodrigo Cotrill who is up very early this morning for the morning call from NAB in Sydney. So maybe we should talk about the CNY yesterday. That's what we started yesterday's podcast on. Up 0.25% today. So what does that tell us about what's happening with the PBOC reference rate and how that is playing out?
Yeah, morning, Phil. Well, it's an interesting one in the sense that it's a bit of a mixed signal coming from the PBOC, because on Friday, they surprised the market by allowing the CNY to trade weaker. Taylor was talking about the fact that, you know, there had been some comments coming from the PBOC in the sense that they're more easing should be expected. But our sense is that the relationship with the CNY and the Japanese yen is super important. And last week, we saw the CNY JPY rising to its highest level in more than 30 years. And we think that would have been, it's likely to have been the catalyst for the PBOC to act. This issue of competitiveness between Japan and China, particularly in terms of global markets for exports, given, you know, the recent tensions that exist between China and the West, has been important. And that weakness that we've seen in terms of the CNY, JPY, or rather the strength of CNY versus JPY, doesn't go well for China. So we think that that's an additional factor for why they stepped in, and they're trying to prevent that cross to rise beyond 21, which is, you know, at the 30-year high at the moment. So in terms of that dynamic, our sense is that from here we need to be mindful of how that cross trades. If we see further strengthening of CNY or further weakness of JPY, if you like, you know, heading towards or above 152, which is another sort of topic within currencies, it will be important, and we wouldn't be surprised if the PBOC steps in again and allows the CNY to weaken against the yen. So I think that that's one important factor. And the other thing is that when you look at history, particularly in the last four periods when the CNY has been allowed to devalue, if you like, by the PBOC, these themes don't just go away. They're not a one-day theme. They tend to last for weeks. So whilst the message from the PBOC yesterday was that, sure, we don't want the currency to depreciate, typically this is a sort of a game that lasts a couple of weeks, and they tend to result in a weaker CNY over that period. So we're still very mindful of what's going to happen over coming days.
I know we're going to see some intervention in Japan as well, with the yen close to a 32-year low. So Masato Kanda, who's the Vice Finance Minister for International Affairs in Japan, saying this is all down to speculation. It's challenging the fundamentals, and intervention may be necessary. He obviously doesn't want import prices to keep rising.
Yes, and certainly he does make the point that, you know, the currency depreciated over 4% in the space of just over a week, and that didn't make sense to him. It kind of does make sense to us, though, because we had the BOJ World Telegraph hike, which was very small, only, you know, 0.1%. Whilst at the same time, the message coming out of the BOJ was that we shouldn't be expecting a series of rate hikes from here, but rather a very, very gradual approach to any tightening from here, and that financial conditions will remain super easy for an extended period of time. So our sense is that the currency is weaker because of, you know, the lack of any sort of strong hawkish message coming from the BOJ, whilst at the same time we still have US Treasury yields at quite elevated levels. So so the currency is kind of doing what it should to some extent, and the MOF can try to talk it down in terms of dollar yen, but the reality is that there are fundamentals supporting the idea that the yen should be weaker. So from here, what is important is that we know there's a level of sensitivity above 152. So the market should be wary that some intervention could come in, but also the magnitude or speed of the depreciation of the yen will be important, because if it's a gradual lift towards 152, 153, we think that they're very unlikely to intervene, but on any sudden move of more significant sort of magnitude, then it's more likely that they will intervene.
Right. So equity markets taking a bit of a breather today. I have to say, I find it fascinating. You read articles about, you know, what direction equity is taking, and everyone's got different ideas. So Goldman Sachs are there saying, well, the S&P 500, we're about the 5,200 level. They say it's going to be 6,000 by the end of the year. But Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan are saying, you know, there's a big concern about valuations generally in US stocks. Unless we see increased profits, then there could be a bit of an adjustment going on.
Yes. I'm leaning towards this idea that, you know, in terms of valuations and those earning growths are quite significant, and we need to see the data or news reports to corroborate that. Otherwise, the, you know, valuations will look challenged. So certainly, and you know, as there's more uncertainty in the outlook for the global economy, that obviously kind of links to it. But at the same time, the U.S. economy has defied expectations. So they continue to do better than others. And it's part of that exceptionalism that is supporting the U.S. dollar as well. So it's a two-way market.
We have to wait and see, don't we? So what about bond yields then? So we've seen them getting higher in Europe and the U.S. overnight. Is that because we're waiting for those inflation numbers from the U.S. later in the week? Is it because we're thinking central banks perhaps are going to hold for longer? So, for example, Catherine Mann, at the Bank of England, she was talking at the Royal Economic Society, their annual conference in Belfast. She said her decision this time was finely balanced. So she was one of the ones who voted to hold, but she is one of those who had voted to rise lift rates the time before to 5.5%. So she almost did the same thing again. So it shows, you know, decisions by central banks are finely balanced, aren't they?
Yes. So I suppose in terms of the US story, you know, we had Bostic come in on Friday highlighting how he had moved down to only one cut this year, and observing, and he spoke overnight again, and he emphasized the concern that cutting too soon could provide more disruptions. And other Fed speakers like Goldsby again reaffirmed the view that three cuts in 2024 look about right, while acknowledging that, of course, inflation is still the main puzzle that needs to be solved. So in terms of the Fed expectations, and that's kind of been supportive for the move up in yields in terms of clearly more uncertainty around whether three cuts are justified or are more leaned kind of, and the risk highlighted towards less. Whilst at the same time, you know, we do have that PCE number coming on Friday, which is a big deal, but it's coming on a day where the market won't be trading. So many have argued that it's probably a good idea to take some chips off the table and weigh things out to see how things play out. And maybe that's also playing a little bit into the uptick in yields as well. As for the UK, what is super interesting in the UK is that, you know, those activity indicators from the PMIs are telling us that the UK is actually seems to be rebounding, particularly in the services sector. And then overnight, we also had that CIB report, again, highlighting how retail sales or retail activity in terms of volumes and sales is improving quite significantly. So there is a bit of a sort of life there in the UK consumer, which again probably plays into Mann's comment that, you know, maybe we need to be a little bit more cautious about how things are developing in the UK.
Yeah. Well, more weakness from the US overnight as well. I mean, I know it's all secondary data, but the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Index was at -11.3 last time. Now it's down to -14.4. But the big contraction, I mean, because it's been in contraction for a long time, it was down to -27.4 in January. But the big fall, production and new orders, both fell this time. Quite a significant fall in new orders, actually, from 5.2 to -11.8. Plus, we've seen a fall in new home sales. So, I mean, there's weak data around.
Yes. So the Dallas Fed is also the third regional survey, and all three are suggesting a little bit of softness there. So it's kind of this mixed signal that, you know, some evidence that maybe there's an improvement in manufacturing activity, and the regionals are telling us otherwise. So certainly, it still plays to the view that the ISM is still going to print in a contractionary mode or below, you know, 50 clearly. And then maybe things are not as rosy as some other indicators are telling us, particularly in terms of the manufacturing activity in the US. So, as for the housing sales, I think that it's probably fair to say that, you know, still activity is quite buoyant, particularly in terms of new housing construction. And that, of course, we've spoken before about those dynamics of, you know, the people with houses don't sell the houses because they don't want to leave their super cheap mortgage.
So you've got to build a new one.
So, yeah. And hence the demand for new ones. So that is overall is still playing well in terms of activity. And although, as you say, the number for monthly sales was a bit down 0.3%. Still, when you look at the year-on-year number, activity is still pretty buoyant there. And again, because of those dynamics.
And that could be because, you know, people are thinking, well, interest rates are going to come down, therefore people are selling. So actually, you know, new home sales might be down because people are buying established dwellings. You know, it's, you know, a complicated picture, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Just like here in Australia, there's more than one factor driving dynamics in house prices.
Right. Now, today, it's all consumer confidence, isn't it? So we get Australia's consumer confidence numbers. 86 last time, which was a bit of a step up, actually. We get German consumer confidence later in the day. And the US, the Conference Board's consumer confidence read tonight as well. So we'll find out how happy people are, or otherwise.
Or otherwise, yes, that's right. But also, again, you know, what they say or what the consumer says and what it does is very different. But certainly in terms of keeping an eye on sentiment, it will be an important one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and durable goods orders as well. So a fall of 6.2% last time, which was revised ever so slightly to being just 6.1% down. Still the worst for quite some time, though. So again, you know, weak data.
Well, if you want the Fed to cut, maybe that's what you want, though.
Maybe. Yeah.
So for now, I think it's all sort of interesting data, but the big one is the PC on Friday.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of playing into sort of this very subdued price action at the moment. We're all kind of waiting to see how that plays out first.
Yeah, we also get the Philly Fed non-manufacturing index as well, and the Dallas Fed services activity index as well. So we can add those to the list. And just quickly before we go, the RBNZ's chief economist, Paul Conway, is talking about the February monetary policy statement as well this morning. Now, he's been saying, of course, interest rates are going to have to stay restrictive for whatever a sustained period of time is. But that's how long, you know, we'll find out more today, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully we get a little bit more color in terms of the line of thinking. And maybe a little bit of acknowledgement in terms of how that weakening of activity, you know, we saw that bad GDP print plays into their way of thinking in terms of how those inflationary pressures should continue to ease or not. And then, you know, if we see further weakness, whether that opens the door for the RBNZ to start considering some rate cuts in the second half of the year.
Right. Good to talk, Rodrigo. I'll go back to you. Caught me listening to my Spotify playlist while I was researching. I was playing the OJs for The Love of Money, which was a fantastic song. I'm just showing my age. I'm going to go back to that while I edit today's podcast. And we'll catch you next time. Thank you.
Cheers, Phil.
And obviously, if we could play music on the podcast, we'd play out with Pink Floyd's Money every day. That would be a great outro, wouldn't it? Instead, we've just got this playing in the background. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Back again tomorrow morning. See you then.